Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Right, guys, welcome back to Coaching Conversations with Pete and Yas. But before we get to today's episode, just a quick announcement from our partnership with St. Mary's University Twickenham.
Yeah, so thanks for having me. I'm Ashley, our performance football coaching course lead, as you know, as a member of our alumni. Our course is unique around the world, so we believe that we have a distance learning model that kind of works for everyone, regardless of where they are in the world. They can study football performance coaching from their environment and put it into their context.
Amazing. And who is it for?
So we really have lots of different unique opportunities. So you can be a pro license coach that we've had in the past. You could be a level 2 UEFA B coach. It's about putting it into your context. So we'll expose students to match analysis, contemporary football coaching cultures, and they can put that into their own practice and improve their knowledge and understanding of the game.
Thank you for that, Ash. And as an alumni member of St. Mary's University Twickenham, I'm proud to announce the partnership that we've got going on, where each week myself and Pete will be delivering conversations around different how-to elements, analysis tips, and obviously some insights from our own experiences as coaches and coach developers. So catch that on YouTube and every week on all major platforms where you can hear it in audio form as well.
Right, everyone, welcome back to another Coaching Conversation with Pete and Yas. And today we'll be discussing the all-debatable opposed versus unopposed practice. What's the right balance? Pete, straight into it. Let's go for it, man.
You know me on this one. I love opposed practices. I think that unopposed practices, although they have their place, I think that what can happen with you can be teaching the wrong things in an unopposed practice. So, you know, players make decisions based on what's happening in front of them. Mm. If nothing's happening in front of them, then they'll make different decisions. Mm. So you could say, oh yeah, well, you know, they need to master the technique. Yeah, great, yes, they do. But how can you make that that mastering of the technique more game realistic? Because I think that's the thing, is that idea we're trying to teach them to play the game. If we're trying to teach them to play the game is opposed. So if we start putting unopposed stuff in there, yeah, you might be able to groove some stuff in them, and you know, you might want we want the ball to go in there, then you make this run, and then so on and so forth. But as soon as you put players in, every time I've seen it with I see what happens. Because don't forget, the other opposition or who you're playing against in training, they know what you're going to do.
Exactly.
Right. So they're going to go, right, okay, we're going to stop that from happening. So what happens, and what decisions do you make? Well, you groove that certain thing in. Then you can't do it because the opposition or players you're playing have cheated against it, because they've said, no, we're not going to let that happen. You know? Because if you say to them then, no, you've got to make that happen, the players...
It's not real, is it?
Yeah, yeah, and the players lose focus. So I think this idea of unopposed, although I feel it has its place,
yeah,
I think I'm always going to sit on the side of opposed.
Right. So, you know, I fully agree with you, but I'm going to come back to a couple of things that you've just said then. I want to start with that last piece. It's got its place.
Yeah.
So you've said that twice now. What is its place? Is the
question. The place is, if say, for example, you've got a player or a group of players who basically it's their technique that's letting them down, you might work a little bit on that to kind of get them into the idea of actually... But this is where you have to be specific, because this is the thing about it, is you can't be like... wishy-washy about it. I want you, and you might say, yeah, just pass it in there. Yeah, that part, yeah, that's it. And the pass goes off. And you go, okay, unlucky, let's do it again. No. You have to then go, that ball went out of play because you did this. And that's what keeps happening in games. I don't want you to do this. I want you to do it like this. So they get in the idea of, say, for example, because it might be that player who might always want to use the outside of their foot. I used to have a player who used to always kick the ball with the outside of his foot. I say, no, no, no. It keeps bending out of play. Use the inside of your foot. Get used to doing that. Groove that technique first in this instance, because you're going to open your body out and then you're going to go into that space with that. Now think about the weight of pass. Now think about blah. Think about that. So you're being really specific about what you want from the player. That way you can get something out of it. But very quickly after you've done that, you've got...
No, do you know, I think that... And I get where you're coming from, right? And the when people ask me the question around unopposed versus opposed, I look at it this way. I agree with you. It's got a place. My viewpoint of it is, with unopposed practice, you might get some benefits from it. And I'm not saying there isn't. But it's two parts. One, are the benefits worth it in comparison to what you could get from doing opposed practice, right? that's one aspect of it. And two, if it's unopposed, my challenge is, why am I getting people to come to my environment to practice unopposed when it's stuff they could be doing outside of it as extras? And those that do want to develop that much further, they will probably take it upon themselves to go and do that work anyway. There might just be some framing and some structure that you can provide them through unopposed practice to do it. And then I look at it as this, well, why would I want unopposed practice like me moving 10 miles an hour when I've got the potential to move 30 miles an hour with opposed practice? Now, the difference being the 30 miles an hour in opposed practice, I might be going through a few roundabouts on the way. Whereas I'm moving 10 miles an hour on unopposed practice just on a straight road. Now, the analogy is quite simple in that there's going to be bumps in the roads. There's going to be you know, detours or whatever you want to call them. But actually, because they're doing it in line with what the speed limit is, and they're doing it on the actual real roads, if you like, they have to learn to experience what those maneuvers are. It's just like driving. We're not driving now the way we are now. The way, you know, how we were when we first started driving. Do you know what I mean? Like when I driving for maybe 15 years, you had horse and carriage in your days. But the point I'm making is through experience that we get it, right? And if we're not exposed to the things that are going to have an influence on our ability to perform in those moments, then fundamentally, how do we get familiarized with it? So I actually have a viewpoint. I say that unopposed practice, if done appropriately, I think it could be one of the highest forms and most useful forms of coaching. However, I think there also needs to be a distinguished element of what do we mean by unopposed and what do we mean by opposed. Now, opposed doesn't mean all of a sudden, right, bang, it's 11v11 or it's full 7v7. Actually, no. Opposed could just simply mean that there is an opposition involved. Therefore, you have those contextual variables that you need to interact with to understand, actually, that technique that I've been drilled on for the last 10 minutes unopposed no longer works because Pete's in the way of the pass. So what do I have to do in order to create the opportunity to utilize that technique whilst Pete's in there? So it might not actually just be as simple as let's play that pass or let's dribble that ball. But then something that kind of came into mind as you were speaking earlier about, well, you need the opposition, right? There's still a way that you can kind of, you know, if you like, bring both together and bleed both ideas together, in that actually it could be that we recognize this person needs an element of technical work around running with the ball, but they also need that element of decision making around when to pass or how to pass. So you might even set up a practice where actually the practice might be 20-30 yards long. The practice starts with them being on the edge of the practice, 20 yards running with the ball, and now you're in a 10x10 space where you might have to make that pass or whatever that looks like. So there is a way to kind of bring both together, but fundamentally the challenge I'd put out there is, why would you move 10 miles an hour when you can move 30?
I mean, I'm kind of not disagreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you in a lot of this. I think what I'm really loath to say is this, is that there's no place for unopposed practice. And it should always be opposed. The reason why I say that is because quite often somebody comes along and proves you wrong and shows you that there is a way of using really good unopposed practice. And I'm sure there's lots of people out there who actually do that very well. But for me, and I have to talk from my own personal point of view, I try to steer away from unopposed practices. And the reason why that is because, as you said, it's about that idea of, you know, why move 10 miles an hour if you can move 30 miles an hour. My thing about it is, why I talk about opposed practices more, is because I want the players to make a decision. That's everything it to me is about the decision that the player makes. If the player makes a decision based on a circumstance where there's no opposition in front of them, and there might be times in the game where there is no opposition, if they're deep in their own half or what have you, and the team have backed off or whatever it is, then they're going to have to make a decision based on that. However, I think this idea of what decision a player makes when they are either being challenged for a ball, when they're challenging for a ball, or when they're about to play a ball. Because if you think about a defensive practice, try and do a defensive practice without opposition. It's practically impossible.
Yeah.
So this idea of unopposed for me is around the skill of you as a coach. What skills do you have to make that unopposed practice very close to the game? There might be things that you might put in there that you might use interference. Because that would still be pretty much unopposed.
I'll be honest, personally, I'm not really for the idea of interference either, because you don't respond to it in the same way. I get the concept behind it. I do understand it, but I would try and veer away from interference. What I would probably be more likely to do is actually, do you know what? I'm going to pass the ball to this camera. But we've got to work up and down a lateral line, if you like, and I've got to find the right time to play the ball to the camera without you intercepting it. Now, all of a sudden, just because you're there, and I might just say, do you know what, Pete, you can only move one step either side, left or right, right? But you've got to create an angle where you block the camera. Now, you can't win the ball off me. I'm just putting a constraint on you, which means you can only intercept. That in itself, I think, is enough of an opposition to get the ball rolling on the argument against unopposed practice. And then coming back to what you said a few moments ago, it's about that decision-making piece. I think, and I'm generalizing here, this is just from conversations I've had with coaches and how people have viewed it. I don't think enough appreciation gets put on the plaque. No, actually, the whole thing is a decision. There are so many decisions within the greater decision, and the fact that actually it's not as simple as where should I pass it, but actually recognizing I've chosen this is where I'm going to pass it. I now need to know what the decision is around how I'm going to strike it to get it there. So within the decision making, it's still largely technical anyway.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. For me, interference, if the interference is ever changing, I think that's also that makes you make this. So you might be having two practices going on. Two sets of players are doing the same thing in a certain area, and all of a sudden you have nobody in front of you. Then you have two or three people in front of you. Then you have one person in front of you, and then you still have to get it to a certain player. We used to do an old practice many years ago where it was you had to
many years ago.
I still do that. Where you had. You numbered the players 1 to 5, and there was players who were also another set of players 1 to 5. So you might have 3 sets of players 1 to 5, and you had to get the ball from player 1 to player 5 in a small area, and the first team.
But while the other groups are doing it at the same time,
exactly. Yeah, okay. First team to get to 5 won the game, and that was quite a good practice because you had people moving around. All around the practice. Now, some said, oh, you could just stand in the line, but you weren't allowed to. You gridded off the box and you had to move around the boxes and so on and so forth. You couldn't have one person in the same box and something like that. I can't remember exactly how it, because I haven't done it for a number of years. But, yeah, a number of years. but again, that interference, you see players making mistakes, even though they knew that nobody could take the ball off them. They would still make mistakes based around the fact that it was interference. But again, for me, I would only do that practice for maybe 2-3 minutes, because for me it was always about this idea. I need them to understand what's going to happen to them on Saturday or Sunday, whatever, whenever the game day was. I really need that, And also, if what you said about your about time, if you've got an hour for your training session and you want them to be ready for the Saturday, well, you need to put them in a practice that's going to be getting them ready for the Saturday or the Sunday, whatever day it is they play. You have to do that because you don't have a huge amount of time. So you've got to think about what's the most effective use of your time at that time. You know, people see unapproached practices on the TV with professional clubs and so on and so forth. Well, professional clubs can do that. They've got five days a week.
Sometimes they might have double sessions and whatnot.
Exactly. And you might be doing it because you just want to get the players loose. They might be doing it, which I do know this happens. They might be doing it for the cameras.
Yeah.
They're doing the practice for the cameras because they're not going to do their
match prep.
Their match practice in front of all the news cameras and the opposition's watching it. Yeah. And Bielsa doesn't even have to leave his house. Yeah. I'll tell you what, I watch the news. I've heard that Arsenal are on. But, you know, it's that kind of thing. And I think, you know, understanding why you do something is the biggest part of this.
Do you think, and this is a conversation I've tried to challenge coaches to think about recently, is that do you think a lot of unopposed practice is used to manage the ego of a coach?
No, I think a lot of unopposed practices is done, especially in, I'm talking about here grassroots, right? It's done because they've seen it on TV. That's why they've done it. They've seen it on TV. It's the understanding of that is what's key. Yeah, you might say it might be because the you know, sometimes it might be something that the coach has seen. As I said, the coach has seen somebody do it. I think I really like that. That looks really pretty and everything else. But is it effective? It looks nice, but is it effective? Yeah, we run to the car, we come off. Yeah, but in there, but yeah, you want that? Yeah, back in there. Yeah, what? Yeah, oh, yeah, you mean now? Yeah, what? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it looks lovely, but is it going to help you on the Saturday?
But does it really? Because the thing is, the reason why I asked the question is because I feel a lot of it has to come down to whether they've thought about it consciously or not. But my observation is I think it comes down to a lot of coaches wanting to feel like they're in control of the session. And I think the unopposed practice allows them to have that. Whereas the unopposed stuff, the fully opposed stuff or the more game-based stuff takes them to a point where it's almost like they've got no idea what's going to happen right now. So they then have to put certain conditions on it to maybe try and bring in and maintain some control over it, whether that be two touch, and because they think that's going to do them. Well, actually, the reality is, if we're playing two touch and I'm playing two touch when there's no one near me, should I be using two touches or should I be holding onto the ball a little bit longer? You know, but that's a separate conversation itself. So that's where my thoughts. I think a lot of coaches, maybe consciously or subconsciously, more importantly, do have an element of control.
Yeah, control is a big piece of that, and I think it helps coaches especially if they're quite new. It helps them to gain that semblance of control, and again, there's kind of nothing wrong with that. But I must admit, I'm just going back, I'm just thinking about, and I was trying to think back about times when I've seen unopposed practices, and I remember seeing an unopposed practice. Put on by Dick Bate, God rest his soul, and that worked. And I tell you why it worked.
Go on.
The reason why it worked was because of the detail that the man used.
100%.
So detailed. So
give us an example, because like I said, I'll come back to the point I made earlier. I think unopposed practice, if delivered properly, could be one of the most beneficial ways to do things. But it has to be done properly in the sense that detail.
It has to be detailed.
No, it's not just what's happening with the player on the ball in the moment, but also the detail that goes with helping the players understand the context of that moment, exactly when they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's a skill. It's a real skill. It's hard. Listen, I'm gonna say it now. I'm not good at it. I am not good at it because I don't practice it. But there are others out there who are very good at it. I've seen coaches who work for professional clubs, who work at the higher level, at England and stuff like that, and they're good at it because it's something that they practice. But all of them, the truth of it is, It's contextual.
Exactly.
We are going to do this because these are the movements that you're going to make and so on and so forth. Then they put them into an opposed practice because they've done it. Now they've got to go, do I go in here or I go in here? Because now the situation has changed. Because within that context, and this was the thing with the Dick Bates session that I saw, it was so, I mean, honestly, I watched it and the pace of the session, the way the ball was moving about and the way he explained it, you've got to play it like this. This is the type of pass that you've got to play. This is the ball speed of the pass. This is the blah. This is the, and it layered the information. So when they went out on the pitch, he put so many the ideas into their players' heads that they are actually able
they're
to
really
see.
Visualize
yeah, exactly. They're visualizing. He was, you know, he was a great orator, and he was able to say, "This is what's going to happen." So it was almost like he told a story through the unopposed practice.
And I think the subconscious thing that happens within that is as players start to trust your methods, they start to challenge less your thinking, your thoughts, your ideas, and like, actually, do you know what? Pete said this, this, and this, and he's hit the nail on the head. And it's a piece that I talk about. It's, that's what helps you build credit in the bank with your players. Because once they understand that what you're saying works and there's a method to the madness, whatever it is, they will start to follow you blindly and not to their detriment. Mm. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you have to build trust in the players. Trust in the players is if they fundamentally don't believe in what you're saying, then basically it will fall down anyway. But if they can see it how it relates to them, then they go, oh, I get it. And when it works, they'll go, yeah, the governor. You know, I remember I heard Anthony Gordon talk about Eddie Howe when he moved him from midfield into centre forward, and he said the gaffer was a genius by doing that because he'd scored a goal, and he kind of said it tongue in cheek. But what he's saying is I trusted him to allow me for me to go and basically I would play him my scoring and winning goal. So you could see that. The players believe in what Eddie Howe is saying. So it's that piece that they bought into something, they believe in it, and so they do it. So he'll ask them to do something else and say, okay, I know you might think it might not work, but trust me on this one. So again, you'll use that term, credit in the bank. That credit in the bank, you can use it at any stage, and that might be you might want to experiment with something. And it's really important that you go, you know what, that didn't work. Okay, fine.
That can equally earn you credit in the bank.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, because
it's
actually being able to recognize, you know what, that was on me.
Yeah,
but even in some moments, actually, I know in the past where I've actually been to players and I'm like, I don't know how this is gonna work out, but I've got an idea. I want to try it. Yeah. Let's see how it goes, and then we'll explore and we'll reflect and we'll decide whether it's worked or not. But if it works, happy days to me.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work.
Yeah,
I'm blaming you. No, but on a serious note, I think it's just getting them to understand that sometimes, and I think that's the human element, right? Because it's almost like, yeah, I am the coach. I know you expect me to know a lot, but I don't know it all. So I'm also trying things. So if we can try things together and create a culture of trying, then hopefully we'll be in a better place for the future. So, verdict: unopposed versus opposed. I think I know exactly what you're saying.
And me personally, I am an opposed. Coach, I like opposed practices, whether that be even-sided, uneven-sided. I think it aids players' decision-making. But I think unopposed practices can work if you have real detail within your unopposed practice and the players can see how it relates to them in the game.
100%. I think you're spot on and I fully agree with you. The only thing I'd layer on top of that is just the consideration of just because you've got opposition in there, doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to respond to it the same way through your match day. So can you try and create situations where the opposition is behaving in alignment to what you'd expect them to behave on a match day? And there you have it, guys. Another coaching conversation with Pete and Yas. And today we discussed the differences between unopposed and opposed practice and what we might prefer amongst one another. Let us know your thoughts. Hit the subscribe button. Leave some feedback. And until next time, guys, take care.
Save big money now on new siding from LP SmartSide at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP SmartSide today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money.